For April the 28th, 2017, we talk about the Night Trap re-release, Puyo Puyo Tetris, and we ask you about something really goofy. Welcome to Level 194. My name is Cole Ross.
My name's David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We're rocking it freestyle this week due to a couple of different factors, but that is fine. This is probably going to end up being a shorter episode, just knowing what I know about how the grind's probably going to work out. But then again, I say that, and whenever I say it, it always ends up being like 2.5 hours.
I think we're going to have a pretty meaty multiplayer this time, I'm thinking.
Possibly. I mean, it's, yeah.
I think we're going to have a 30-minute silent contest midway through the episode, too.
Yeah, just to trick people into thinking there's content, yeah.
Just go play some 622.
Yeah, I mean, how does that differ from every week?
By the way, 622 is the sequel to John Cage's 422? 433?
Yeah, I think it's 433.
Oh, did I get the numbers wrong? Damn it.
Yeah.
No, it's the new one. It's our generation's John Cage.
It's more extreme. Yeah.
I know. I used to troll one of my I was friends with a PhD student in trumpet, which that's just like most crazy major I've ever heard anyways. But he'd always like ask for requests, and I'd always request 422. Or whatever the number is.
I mean, it is a piece of music. It's just the mute, like the music isn't coming from the instruments, it's the sound of an uncomfortable crowd. It's what an orchestra hall sounds like when nobody's playing. So it's the coughing and the shuffling and stuff. I'm being serious. Like, that's, yeah.
I did get some function out of that song. Like 2 years ago, I had a Silent Hill Halloween costume, and I had my phone playing a music playlist the entire time.
Okay.
Which just consisted of static and then John Cage's 433 a couple of times. So just random bursts of static throughout the day.
Huh. So did you have it on random with just multiple instances of 433?
No, I actually made it like sequential and then on loop. So I would put like
nice.
Three versions of it, then six versions of it or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it'd be awesome to have it set to random and then just have maybe like, let's say 15 times as much silence as static.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then that way it's completely completely random. You can never Okay, so Ben, I think you did your Halloween costume wrong, okay? And here's how I would have made it better.
All right. Next year I'll go as Doctor Who and then go back in time and fix my old Halloween costume.
Okay, cool. I mean, that's all I ask.
So vaguely on the subject of staticky ghosts, have either of you ever played Layers of Fear?
Yeah.
The way the ghosts are depicted in that, the kind of like staticky, like busted CRT monitor thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where was that originally done? I know I've seen that, like that depiction of like how we show this is a ghost before, but I can't think where I recognize it from.
I don't know.
Did you see it in your attic?
That was way too scary, guys.
I know, we're too far away from Halloween. This isn't working.
Yeah, we're about as far away from Halloween as you can get right now, I think. Yeah, it's the end of April. I have no idea. Like, I just the idea of like, oh, this is a ghost, and I can tell because it's like a faulty projection.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like, I know I've seen that. Like, you know, like, I know there's some movie I saw that in. Or, I don't know. It's just been bothering me.
Yeah.
Awesome game, though.
Yeah. We knew it will last for next week's multiplayer.
We're just turning the multiplayer into lazy web.
Yeah.
So I'm positive somebody will in the Slack may be able to give us an example of it. I'm just coming up with I'm pulling a blank.
Yeah.
So, or on Twitter, you know, any of that. Like, we give our Twitter handles out at the end of the episodes. Yeah. So,
yeah.
I think that we have achieved a requisite level of banter. between those.
At least 3/4 the amount of banter that we typically do. So
right. That's just going to have to be okay. So why don't we get started with? Wait a second. About Jump the Gun? We've got the regular kind of show for you. 3/4 of a regular show anyway. We're going to do the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and we're going to get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. David, I want to hear your story first, and not just because you swooped me.
Haha, swooped.
Okay.
So apparently a company named Screaming Villains has announced that they are going to re-release Night Trap on the PlayStation 4 as a physical product. And so Night Trap was kind of an infamous game. It's a full motion capture game where high school age girls are having a slumber party, as you do, and, get attacked by some sort of weird. I'm not actually sure what the hell they're supposed to be.
They're vampires.
Those are supposed to be vampires?
Yeah.
Okay,
wait, are vampires?
No. Maybe.
Some of them eventually.
So some sort of stripped out like steampunk vampires.
Yeah, they're dressed up like burglars.
Because vampires apparently have to wear masks in order. Okay. and kind of the twist is that you're basically a security guard dude who's observing all of this through closed circuit TV, and you have to, use traps and stuff to protect the girls. So it's basically like 90s Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah, Five Nights at Freddy's is like a direct quote of that, where you're not a direct observer to the action, but you're just doing what you can to affect the world from a distance.
Right. Yeah. And it's kind of most famous or infamous for the fact that it found itself in the crosshairs of the video games kind of War Panic. And if I remember correctly, the kind of the two things were, one, that it kind of was reported to sort of have some pseudo voyeuristic things, which I'm not sure one way or the other if that actually was a thing.
I mean, you're watching teenage girls, from a distance, and it's presumed that they don't know that you're doing it.
Okay, and let's all, for no apparent reason, get Nate. Like, doesn't do that.
Group shower. It's never that. Like, it is about as tawdry as like a. Let's say a network television, like made for TV, like horror movie.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And my understanding is that a lot of the like original reported that like you were the bad guy who was like predating.
Yeah. So the idea was like, hey, this is a game that is going to teach you how to break in and attack a group of girls.
Right. Which is true, as long as that group of girls has like trapdoors and various other like Looney Tunes style traps spread throughout their house.
Yeah. Like it had all the cards stacked up against it because it was an FMV game, right? Or it is an FMV game, which was unusual at the time. It did have like, not violent content, but its content alluded to the possibility of violence toward real people. It also came kind of hot on the heels of a number of other controversies around things like Mortal Kombat or Doom. Sure. So just a bunch of stuff like that, even though Night Trap, interestingly enough, like it was developed in like 1989 for some other just kind of like purely video entertainment system. And people know about, the Sega CD and the Sega CD 3-2X ones, those didn't arrive until like 5 years later because they needed a way to make money off of this.
Sure.
But yeah, this was Joe Lieberman famously like called this out as a horrible thing that was ruining children. And then he turned around and killed the single payer in the healthcare bill, so fuck him.
So, and then nothing bad ever happened in American politics again.
Right.
Yep, that was the last one.
So kind of some of what you were getting into, apparently this was released three times for the Sega something or another.
Three times, I don't know. Two times it was on the regular Sega CD, and then there was like a semi-enhanced version for the Sega CD and 32X.
Right, and so I guess the physical copy of the game will come with a cover from each of them,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of cool. And also the game now has a theme song, which you can download.
Oh, it always had a theme song. Like it was an Easter egg, but yet you had to initiate a certain number of actions to make them do it. To make that happen, but yes, it was in there all the time.
Okay, nice.
Hmm. Yeah.
So there we have it.
Do you guys have any favorite FMV games?
Gabriel Knight 2 definitely has to be. Well, if Myst counts, then it has to be Myst. But Gabriel Knight 2 holds a special place in my heart.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I remember there being a lot of cool FMV arcade games.
Mm-hmm. Your Mad Dogs McCree,
Area 51 and stuff.
Yeah, I just remember like a lot of really cool light gun games. I don't remember which ones.
Lethal
There's
Enforcers.
One like a Wild West one that was cool.
Yeah, Mad Dog McCree. That's what that.
Okay,
Maximum Force. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to give a shout out to X-Files video game, which was like 7 discs for the PlayStation 1.
I remember that. People talk about that kind of fondly. Like apparently that was actually kind of okay.
Yeah.
I feel like it being 7 discs and presumably never advancing the plot is entirely appropriate to the X-Files.
X-Files was better before it had a plot.
Well, okay, yeah, that's true. The problem was they had to go one way or the other. Either don't have a plot and just like Bigfoot all the way down, or have a plot and go somewhere with it.
Pick a lane, Scully. Yeah.
We're all in agreement, like after about the third episode, she's just straight up in denial.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
But yeah, something that's interesting about this, if you go back and play so we did Night Trap for Abject Suffering for one of the mm-hmm. premium episodes, and that was really fun. Like, hey, we're gonna do this crazy notable thing. The video quality is super grainy, like mm-hmm. just postage stamp, like you would expect for a console, from around that era. Looking at the kind of announcement trailer, it's not high quality. Like it's still like VHS, just kind of like digital, like we're just going to record this to tape kind of quality, but it is not, as chunky as that. So I'm actually kind of interested in this as like a preservation of that original footage and presentation. And like something that we found that we, latched onto in that episode is like, this has the core of a really good gameplay idea. Yeah. Like there's nothing actually really terrible about this aside from most of its components, but the idea is good.
So what would you say is the kind of the idea?
Oh, it's that Five Nights at Freddy's thing where like you're going through and like activating like the different traps have different colors that you have to activate to, and that plays into it. Like and you are like watching, and it's made for multiple playthroughs where you have to understand like what the paths of these burglars, of these vampires are.
Vam burglars?
Mm. Yeah, vam burglars. Yeah. I don't know. This seems pretty cool. I was happy, even if you swooped me, David, I'm happy that it got on the show.
Yeah, it's this just seems kind of cool.
Yeah.
I do kind of wonder what the equivalent Moral Panic is going to be in, like, I guess, what, 25 years from now?
I mean, it's going to be VR. Like, the second that there is a VR that is more affordable and is directly aimed at, or more directly accessible to kids and not just, nerds, that's what it's going to be, is VR.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I still like watching like the 90s TV shows where if you're wearing VR and someone rips off the headset, you'll be like lost in the computer.
Oh yeah, if you die in the game, you die in your real life. Yeah, mm-hmm. Sam Rockwell told me that. Or no, Adam Goldberg. Sorry, I get those two confused a lot.
Lawrence Fishburne told me.
Lawrence Fishburne. Oh God, why is Lawrence Fishburne inherently funny? probably because I know he used to go by Larry Fishburne, but then he changed it to Lawrence, and that's good.
That dude lied about his age to be in Apocalypse Now. Like, he was 16 when they filmed that movie. That's awesome.
It's so good. Ben, you have exciting news. I want to hear your story.
This is kind of like a micro story, but Jackbox Party Pack 4 is coming out this fall, they announced. And they announced one of the five games that's going to be on it is Fibbage 3.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. The only information that they gave about it is that the same way that Fibbage 2 kind of opened up to more audience participation, this will further that as well, and there will be even more audience participation in this model, which means that we'll probably have even more fun times if we do Jackbox parties on the stream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, this is incredibly exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm really, really jazzed about this. Are you so... Okay, so Ben... Are you a Fibbage man, or are you a Quiplash man?
I'm the horror one, man.
Oh, the trivia, horror trivia?
By far the best games, yeah.
That's so good.
It had psychological experiments in it, and it was like, oh, this is great. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, so what, are we talking like game theory stuff? Like you have to decide which member to execute or whatever?
Yeah, like there's three people, and they have to decide whether to take the money or not, and mm-hmm. if... I think one person does and the other two don't, they die. Like that sort of thing. So like Prisoner's Dilemma.
Yep.
So
precisely. Yeah. No, it is very good. Man, I need to get off my ass and start streaming again because those are a lot of fun.
Give a shout out when you do. I'll play.
Yeah. So the reason I set up Quiplash and Fibbage against each other is because they are very similar in a lot of ways. But I'm so much better at Fibbage than Quiplash. Just because I am good at coming up with convincing lies, I feel like. Yeah. I feel that feels more natural to me.
Do you use this on the show at all, Cole? What are you telling me?
It's mostly the foundation of my comedy. Huh? is saying untrue things with confidence.
Be fair, I feel like that's, you know, mostly the foundation of, like, the current presidency. So, you know... That can
so I don't think they're convincing, yes. But...
Yes. Well, wait a minute. Seriously, and I'm on the right path. Four more years. No, I got sad. Quiplash is good. Quiplash is funny, but I think that it is harder to get a good group of Quiplash together.
Which one's Quiplash?
Quiplash is the one where it is like there is a prompt, and then two people have to write their answers to it. Like it's almost always like... Which of so and so is blank, and then two people fill in the blanks at the end of it, and then the group has to decide which one is funnier.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't think I've played that one actually. I've played the like weird like multiplayer Pictionary thing.
Oh yeah.
I've played Fibbage. I think those are the only two I've played.
Mm-hmm. Droffle's very good as well. I like Droffle a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think Quiplash you're on a timer, so I think. People might have a difficult time trying to get the jokes in mm-hmm. when they're under pressure.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like every week for me on the show.
I still want to do a multiplayer like roulette with our viewers of keep talking and no one explodes.
Yeah, I would be terrible with that. I'm terrified of that game. Terrified. And then I've got a story here.
What do you got?
This is related to a story we talked about a couple of weeks ago, talking about a Red Dead Redemption recreation that was being done in Grand Theft Auto 5 mm-hmm. using their own creation tools. So this was being done by modders. It was a huge undertaking. Some people even turned it into a full-time not job, because I don't think they were getting paid for it, but they were, you know, doing
full-time passion project.
Yeah, a whole bunch of work. And so I mean, it got enough publicity that Rockstar decided to step out and say, like, hey, guys, you really can't be doing that. And so it has been called off. I don't think that they got a I don't think that they got an official cease and desist, but I think that it was somebody who represented the IP saying, like, yeah, this is not going to fly. So, like, the leader of the project came out and said, hey, we sadly have to say we're stopping this project, so thanks, but it isn't going to happen. Sorry. So, yeah, this is probably got something to do with the Red Dead Redemption 2 announcement that happened last year, and the fact that they want to make sure that, you know, their stuff is protected.
Competition.
I mean, like, I don't know about competition, but, like, you know, I'm never going to side with the big company, but, like, they are doing something that makes a little bit of sense. They have to protect their trademark, right? Otherwise, it's taken away. So, like, it makes sense in the mechanics of the way that IP law works. But, you know, you have to imagine it's a bummer for these dudes, and it's also a bummer for anybody who wants to play something approximating Red Dead, the original Red Dead, on their on a modern system.
What's more fitting than the two games having a duel with one another to see which one's better?
I mean, it's going to have to be. I mean, like, unless Red Dead 2 is, you know, it's just a shit in a box. And then if you buy it on PSN, they just ship you a shit in the box. You know, like, that's not going to be.
The Cards Against Humanity, I guess.
Jeez. I forgot about that. That makes me sad. Man, I'm real sad today. I don't know why. No. but unless Red Dead Redemption 2 is just really, really terrible, it has to look and feel and play better and have more new ideas than a fan-made thing that is, you know, people using a game engine that wasn't designed for this to make something, you know, entirely huge and new, you know, or old, as the case may be. Yeah.
I mean, Rockstar's got a fairly good track record for, like, everything except Max Payne.
Yeah.
Which Max Payne?
I guess, what'd they call it? 3?
Yeah, the one that took place in Brazil.
Yeah.
Yeah. But people even like that.
Yeah, I dislike what they did with the storyline. The actual gameplay's pretty good.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, Rockstar generally does okay stuff, and, like, people will have complaints about it just because people always have complaints about stuff that big. See also, you know, Mass Effect or anything with the Elder Scrolls name on it, or anything Bethesda touches. But
I hope they Bethesda? Have plain view in Red Dead Redemption 2. Just the based off of There Will Be Blood is
yep, the
oil derricks. Yep. Yeah.
I'm sure, but like, it's gonna be I don't know. I forget. Wait, I cannot.
Is that actually a thing? Are they, like, time advancing some?
Yeah. So it's, I guess it's an anachronism, but
well, it wasn't an anachronism. Like, they like the original Red Dead Redemption took place at, like, in, like, 1902 or something like that.
Oh, okay, then that would be right in there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like the entire story was about, you know, the modernization of the West.
Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I mean, that would actually be interesting to do, like, advance it enough that, you know, it actually was kind of a different setting than has been done millions of times before.
But then maybe don't do what the Call of Juarez did and then make the cartel and make it something that's set in modern day, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
although apparently the most recent Call of Juarez is apparently pretty amazing.
Are you thinking of Gunslinger, the one that's, like, real short and it's like a Rashomon kind of thing?
Rashomon?
What's
a Rashomon?
Rashomon's the Akira Kurosawa movie that is about the same story told from multiple different perspectives.
Yes, that's exactly yes.
Yeah. No, the Gunslinger is good and fun. But the cartel was released more recently and was quite bad.
Okay, it was set in modern day. That's interesting.
Yeah. So, sucks for these guys, sucks for people who were looking forward to it, but like with any of these high-profile fan projects, like, that was probably going to happen, so...
See, that's why you always release early to the interwebs where the powers that be can't stop it.
Or just hope nobody finds out about the thing you're doing. Like, when you're being promoted on the sites that we look at for our stories, like, it's gonna, you know, you've already gotten enough attention to have your spot blown up. You're just hoping for the, you're hoping for the goodwill of something that necessarily cannot have goodwill.
Right.
Yeah.
We're really, really keeping it light.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer. So this was posted by Dennis earlier today, but he's not here. So I will read the question that the nice people asked us. He says, inspired by our Ultimate Epic Battle Simulator chat last week, that is about the indie game lets you fight large numbers of like units and enemies of varying different scales. So picture a gigantic turtle against an army of zombies, stuff like that, like a bunch of wacky stuff. So pursuant to the us talking about that last week, if you could drop any combination of characters from across games into UEBS, what matchups that's weird what matchups no what matchups would you most want to see, and how do you think they would play out?
Be fair. Army of Machops versus army of, say, Bruce Lee's.
All right, so I'm going to start with mine. What about an army of Machops with half a sized army of Machamps? Which one would win?
Well, I mean, so 100 duck sized Machops
versus 100 Machop sized Psyducks?
Right, yep. So, now you're onto it. So Ben, what does Juan say?
Juan says Chosen Undead from Dark Souls versus Bloodborne to see how the fighting styles and skill sets would hold up. I assume that DS is Dark Souls, not Demon Souls.
Yes, the Chosen Undead would be from Dark Souls 1.
Cool.
Yep.
Or just for fun, an Absolute Madness, an army of Pikmin versus the wonderful 101.
That's actually pretty good.
Yeah. See, I don't know. I think that the Chosen Undead from Dark Souls versus the Hunter from Bloodborne. I think that maybe the Chosen Undead might have an advantage, even though neither of them can technically die. the Chosen Undead can wear armor, whereas there is only one set of armor in Bloodborne, and it's not even very good.
Mm.
Yeah.
Gotta throw their bones.
But yes, an army of Pikmin against anything would also be very good. I would like to see them just carting off the different body parts.
It'd be the cutest way to die.
I do think I have always kind of wondered that, like, what is the break even point between, like, small and numerous versus whatever, you know, like, large and powerful.
The break-even point.
Well, because, like, presumably...
I think Reddit's deemed it as 100. So.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, like, I think at some point, like, it's just, you know, small enough that, like, it doesn't matter how many there are.
Okay, so you're talking about, like once you get down to, like, bug scale.
Yeah, or like, where is, like, where... Because I'm a data nerd, I would want to plot the line of, like, number versus, like, size.
Yeah. I'll tell you what that is. I will actually tell you where those two lines intersect, and that is the scarab beetles from the 90s movie The Mummy.
Yes.
Because those things can climb up in you and make you a bug puppet. You're theirs now.
I'm really hoping those make a comeback in the remake.
Oh, the scarabs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, David, you bring up a good point, though, because what if you just do specks of sand versus people? And if you get enough specks of sand that wherever you're spawned somewhere in the universe, you have a high enough probability of suffocating by the specks of sand.
Yeah.
That right.
You could have a number that large.
Yeah. So. And one of anything that is sufficiently big would have its own gravitational pull.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Or would be too big that, like, its cells couldn't exist and it would rupture, you know, like, just because, like, eventually you get so big that your volume increases much faster than your surface area can. And so, like, you're, you know, okay, I'll be as big as 1,000 suns, and then just all of your goo just runs out of you.
It's become a black hole.
Yeah.
But if you're an alien and your goo is made of acid, you still might win.
Okay. See, there we go. So we've got an infinite number of the scarab beetles against one infinitely large xenomorph.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is the engine that powers eternity.
Everybody loses.
Let's see, David.
One down.
David, what does Eric say?
Eric says, Hylian soldiers versus stormtroopers.
Yeah. Both of them are useless. But I gotta say, the stormtroopers at least have laser guns.
Yeah. Well, what about, I feel like the relevant question, have they made a Star Wars Dynasty Warrior game yet?
No, but with the rate that they're cranking those things out.
Yeah.
Yeah, Battlefront's more of like a battle, like a third-person battlefield, though. You're not working at the scale that the Warriors games are.
When you get to be one of the Jedi, though, you can, like, plow through people and cut them down. So it's kind of similar.
Yeah.
True. But, like, because I remember the Hylian soldiers being, like, at least semi-useful in whatever it was called.
Yeah. I mean, the Hylian soldiers are definitely really good at spotting you when you're trying to sneak into the garden.
Yeah, that was annoying as hell.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think it is up to us to decide the winners. He said, breaking his rule against what he just said. He said, knowing that he had already broken the rule he just stated. Yeah. David writes, a Hero of Time battle royale between the Lynx at the end of their respective games. Okay, so again, we are in this. Like, this isn't just who would win against who. This is importing everybody with their movesets and their... and their, I guess, entire aesthetic into this, because as we know, character counts into this indie game. And again, we're not talking about the scale of these either.
Well, yeah, but maybe we could split them into like the three timelines, you know, allied against each other.
I'd rather not think about, the less I can think about the timelines, the better, if I'm going to be honest with you.
I think it would be interesting because you'd have Child Link, Adult Link, and Shadow Link all fighting one another from Ocarina of Time.
Well, I'm thinking about this. If you look at the number of pixels between the Link in Breath of the Wild versus Link in the original Legend of Zelda, the original Legend of Zelda Link would just be inhaled. He'd be microscopic if, you know, we are looking at this pixel per pixel.
So we're back to a million Legend of Zelda Links versus one Breath of the Wild Link.
Yeah, and I think you've got yourself a piranha situation there.
I feel like Breath of the Wild Link wouldn't do as well as some of the other ones because he has like stamina and he's like very frail, it seems.
Yeah,
you know?
He's a real tired boy. He's so sleepy. Yeah. Ben, what does Javier say?
Javier says, I'd want to pit the locust swarm against a horde of cuckoos from Zelda. the thought of a Brumac being covered by angry chickens is enough to make me smile.
Like building the cuckoos into, or the cuckoos into, man, I feel weird even saying something that contains the syllable cuck. building some kind of cuckoo functionality into this might actually be really fun, especially because you're talking about the scale. Okay, so picture this. I've never played this Ultimate Epic Battle Simulator, but there is just like one cuckoo who's on the battlefield. In order to win, you have to kill him. But if you attack him enough but don't finish the job, then all of a sudden, so many reinforcements that your computer stops up, turns into a slag of molten silicon, and then sinks to the core of the earth.
So it's your computer against the cuckoo.
I think I did. I think I literally did make the China syndrome joke last time. this is why we can't talk about the same thing 2 weeks. It takes me a long time to come up with new material. David, what does Sam say?
Sam says, an XCOM squad versus any number of Kerbals. The Kerbals have full access to their usual facilities. Whoever wins, it will be very sad.
Well, an unlimited number of Kerbals would quickly colonize the entire universe, even with the attrition rate.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, not my Kerbals.
Okay, that's fair. But
Every XCOM soldier that dies is a tragedy, so.
Yeah, so that's the thing. So, like, the Kerbals do not mourn, whereas XCOM commanders do.
It seems like a lose-lose situation. The Kerbals, I feel like, are like the Ewoks, where it's not great watching them die, probably.
Yeah. I mean, like, it happens on the reg. Like, not good things don't happen to them.
To the Ewoks or the Kerbals?
Either.
Okay. As long as it's not the house elves that kill those things. Anyways, I don't know, though. Like, XCOM manages to take down super advanced, like, alien UFOs with fighter jets that somehow, like, basically just fighter jets.
Yeah.
I feel like that's got to be worth something.
Isn't that what happens on Independence Day?
Yeah. So basically, I think we can, on the, like, official SI unit of badass, the XCOM is at least one Will Smith.
Okay. That's a pretty bold claim. I don't disagree with it. It's just a bold claim. I think you're going to... You're gonna Sorry. Okay, you caught me off guard with that. Jeremy writes, an army of Star Wars stormtroopers fighting an army of Tolkien orcs to see which expendable is the most expendable. Alternatively, a giant army of stormtroopers and other Star Wars characters versus a giant Gary Butterfield doing his best Godzilla impression.
So can you vouch for this? How good is Gary's Godzilla impression?
I can't remember. He does a few of these impressions. I cannot recall specifically his Godzilla one.
Okay.
See, the thing is, after we record everything, it falls out of my mind. So, no, seriously, like I will shut down this recording right now. We'll turn this car around. No, I'll shut this down at the end of the night and I will forget everything that we said.
I think that's honestly the first time that you threatened us to shut down the podcast.
Just for tonight until you learn.
We've been on good behavior so far, I feel like, the first 200 episodes.
Yeah. It's been 8 years of probation. I can't even remember what this is. See, the thing is, you're mixing in other Star Wars characters, and if this game can properly model the tow line physics, all of a sudden, boom, you got a bunch of snowspeeders taking Gary down like he's an AT-AT. I don't care how good his impression is. Okay. Yeah. let's see. Ben, what does... What does Justin say?
Yeah. This one hits home. All the barbecue fans from Austin versus every vegan in Portland. I don't know.
Okay, so this is just turned into a versus and would you rather kind of thing. So,
and that makes my day.
Okay. I don't know what happened. I think it, like, in the terms of this game, the way it would model is like they would just beat each other to death with their bare fists.
I feel like I'm kind of an optimist. I feel like Texans would find a way to make vegan barbecue and everyone could be happy.
Yeah, to be fair, like I think you'd have a mobility thing, because I think the Portlanders, we'd have to give the fixies too. So they definitely have battlefield mobility.
Yeah.
Although I feel like the Texans would presumably have propane and propane accessories.
Including some kind of weird propane-powered car. Yeah. So I think that what the Austin barbecue fans gain with their, I think, not comfortable, not their comfort with killing, but I think just with the acceptance of, you know, that life is expendable versus a vegan who, for ethical reasons, may want to prefer not to, you know, gain nourishment from the suffering and enslavement of creatures. I'm trying my best to be politic about this. So Austin fans probably, or the barbecue fans probably, okay with killing, or at least better
being
acclimated
to
the idea. Yeah. Carnage. Let's just say carnage
being
in the most basic sense of the word.
Proximal to murder.
Yeah. I think the vegans are going to be more resourceful. I think vegans have to think on their feet a lot. And I think that'll probably get them the advantage.
Okay.
Again, we're talking infinite numbers versus infinite numbers.
I mean, I think I think, you know, Jala could ninja some people.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't pick a fight with her. Come on.
Yeah. I also think a lot of people in Austin wouldn't be really too prone to fight. I think a lot of them would just want to chill out and go to brunch or something.
Yeah, that's the thing. Specifying Austin, if you just said Texas, this might actually change it. But yeah, it's definitely
said
a real
Texas,
brunch crowd.
We'd have to consider the comparable number of firearms.
Right. And let's see. David finishes out with Jonathan.
Jonathan says, Adenton versus Corvo versus Garrett. Who can be the sneakiest? I'm totally blanking. What is Denton? What's that from?
That is Deus Ex.
Okay, that's right. That's right.
Denton, comma,
JC. Agent 47 is going to kill them all because they didn't even know he was in the fight.
Yeah. Let's see here.
Okay, so, the most recent Deus Ex.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to throw in and say, boom, just like Ben did with Agent 47, we got to get ourselves an Altair in here. He can hide in a crowd. So he'll be
in the middle of them as they're fighting.
Yeah.
Just praying and walking slowly.
Shit. Okay. I was blank. I read Garrett as Geralt or whatever the dude from The Witcher,
okay.
Which I feel like he would be semi-appropriate, but he would definitely be like the James Bond of this. Like, Geralt is too sneaky as James Bond is to being a spy. Like, theoretically, he's supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
But, for this, that's a tough one.
Yeah. I'm gonna say Corvo because he has Fel forces on his side.
True, but Denton has nanomachines, son.
Yeah. I'm still gonna say Corvo because I like those games the best.
Yeah, and to be fair, he did say a Corvo. So,
yeah. So
presumably that could be. I have no idea what the little girl's name is. Miss Corvo. Like I'm choosing it to be like a Miss Pac-Man type thing.
Okay. Huh.
Corvo with a bow in his hair.
Yes. Yeah.
What do you guys have for your answers?
Oh, jeez. Okay, so, okay.
For mine, I was going to go with Senator Armstrong versus Trump.
So just dropping him in.
Well, to be fair, Trump is the first president to ever be featured in a video game. He had Trump's real estate tycoon.
Oh, he certainly did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that before or after Abe Lincoln was in the Fight Club video game?
Okay. Well, I'm talking like acting, you know.
Like living. Yeah.
Yeah. So so I'm going to go with Armstrong versus Trump.
Yeah. Okay, so would Trump get access? Would he get access to the power armor that Armstrong has?
To nanomachines, son. I think so. Yes.
Okay.
I didn't realize. I don't know how where I saw it or something. I did not realize that one of Armstrong's lines is literally, "I'm going to make America great again."
Oh yeah, yeah. And then also your memes end here. Yeah. It's really prescient. It's actually kind of depressing. It's depressient. Ben, how about you?
All right. So I think I would do one Stormtrooper versus one GoldenEye AI bot on the easiest setting and just see how long it takes before anything happens of consequence. Stormtrooper's just going to miss the entire time. GoldenEye guy might hit him, but it's not going to do any damage.
Okay. Yeah. My answer would have to be, okay, so take a Colossus. Any Colossus, please. No, take even just like the first Colossus from Shadow of the Colossus. Bump him up to 5x size,
mm-hmm.
but put him against 10 regular Wanders.
Ooh.
What was the second one?
The protagonist, the character you play as in Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's like kind of like the idea for they had an idea for a sequel for Shadow of the Colossus where it was like co-op where it'd be like mm-hmm. two people taking down Colossi.
That'd be fucking great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. That's what I want.
I feel like you could do a number of good things for that. Like, I'd love to see a Colossus versus the Statue of Liberty from Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I could see that.
Just think if you have two people climbing a Colossus and you have, like, a wire between them or something, and you could use that to, like, swing to different places. Mm. That'd be great.
Yeah, no, I'd be...
So, like, Colossus versus Ice Climbers.
Yeah.
Actually, that's pretty good.
Huh.
We stumbled into a good answer. Way to go.
Between Losses all of us.
Versus Katamari Damacy guy.
Well, the Katamari guy just needs time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, man. So
just roll up the smaller Colossi first and then get to the bigger one.
Yeah, go from the tiger all the way up to the tower. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, this has been really goofy. Thank you, everybody who wrote in. I should probably at this point go download and check out this thing just so I can see how wrong we were about the way this thing works. But if you want to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, and those go up on Tuesday afternoons.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about what we have been playing over the past week or so. I'm going to be as presumptuous as to say I would like to go first.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Do it.
So a new game came out today as of the day that we are recording this. And I bought it and played it and like it a lot. It is called Puyo Puyo Tetris.
Ooh.
Go on.
Yeah. So I got this for the Switch, downloaded off of their little eShop. And so this is a game by Sega that is a combination Tetris game and Puyo Pop game.
What is a Puyo Pop?
You may be familiar with it as Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine. Have you ever played that?
No, sorry.
Okay, nope. So Puyo Pop, it is a similar game to Tetris insofar as it is a puzzle game where pieces fall from the top of the screen, except every piece is a group of two. So it's a 2x1.
Oh, and, they're like breakers?
What?
Okay, never mind.
it's like a color matching game. Like each of these is like two little blobs that are different colors, and when four or more blobs of the same color touch, they go away, and then this creates sets of combos.
It's so, like Dr. Mario. Okay.
It's pretty similar to Dr. Mario, actually. Except you're not so much trying to deal with the viruses that are put around. It's incredibly just more combo focused. Okay. And I know Dr. Mario is pretty combo focused, but like this is like you are trying to set stuff up so you can fuck somebody over most of the time, because Puyo Pop is always set up as a two player game most of the times that I've seen it. Like if you set up a huge enough combo, you drop garbage blocks on your opponent, and then that is the way that you win, by kind of fucking up their combos and their plans.
Is there any way to get rid of the garbage blocks, or are they there to stay?
You have to pop. You have to pop some of the blobs that are like right next to those.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So like, yeah, it just it would make sense if you saw it. It's very difficult to explain it visually, but like, yes, if a block that goes away via a combo, goes away next to it while it's touching it, then that one will go away. So you can kind of break through it. And there's like stuff you can do like. The garbage blocks will be queued up at the very top of your screen as it's going, and if you clear something, then it will kind of like get rid of that so it doesn't fall. So like you could just like sacrifice a combo that you're setting up in order to make sure that a bad one doesn't fall, hoping to recreate it. But yeah, like at its most basic, really, you know, even from just the title screen, you can select to play Tetris or Puyo Pop. Just like right there, you know, playing as it goes, and they are really good Tetris and Puyo Pop games. Something about having a Tetris game on my Nintendo handheld just feels right. My previous favorite Tetris game was the Nintendo one, or the DS one, rather. Mm-hmm. The one that had all of the Nintendo kind of branding and characters and stuff around it. And this one is very good and fun, and like it's nice being able to like set that up on your TV and then pick it up. It's got, you know, it really takes advantage of the Switch's kind of form factor which is really cool. And Puyo Pop, I have like a little bit less of an attachment to. Like, I played a lot of Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine way back when, but like my mind works like a Tetris. It doesn't work like a Puyo Pop thing does. I'd rather just like very quickly set up the lines and deal with that kind of chaos as they you know, randomize the pieces, than like worry about the colors lining up and setting up moves like crazy far in advance.
It's so awesome.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's just not the way my brain works, you know.
Yeah,
it could be fair. Could be experience. Like Puyo Pop is also, I think, just harder. It's harder for me. Like, I also think that Dr. Mario is pretty hard, you know. like playing that at any real level is pretty difficult for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But so like, hey, Puyo Puyo Tetris, that's kind of weird. You can play this little hybrid fusion version of this where, you're on a grid, and as you, are dropping the pieces, there are both the Puyo blobs and the, Tetris blocks, and you are trying to get rid of both. I tried a couple of rounds of this, and it was fucking crazy, you guys.
So they have both different pieces. So like you'll have like a two multicolor thing, and then it'll drop down a Tetris thing as well. Or
yep. Yeah,
that sounds weird.
And so like if you drop a Tetris block on top of a Puyo, like the Puyo blobs, it will start crushing them. And like over a certain number of ticks, it will flatten down to the bottom of the screen or to whatever Tetris block is below this. And if you clear away a Tetris block line, that will affect your Puyo blob combos. It's so much to keep track of.
Oh wow! Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
We need to add in some Pong. Mm-hmm. We need some paddles in there.
Like, so I was not successful at this at all because, you know, like I said, I'm okay at one of these and really bad at the other. So, like, you know, I lost my match because I also had garbage blocks being dropped on me. but yeah, like, I was kind of like, oh, this is an interesting idea that ought not work the way that I see it working right now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That's a really cool dynamic to add to it. Yeah,
yeah. And they've got like a whole bunch more stuff in this. Like, I'm sorry, I'm just like monopolizing this by explaining it. But like, there's a there's a story mode that is entirely superfluous. It is the most irritating thing I've ever experienced. Somehow, it's more irritating. it's
what's
so,
the central conflict?
It's the conflict is between.
Well, have you seen Tetris the movie?
Or Marvel Madness the movie? Let's throw Marvel Madness in.
Wait, did you say Marvel Madness?
Not Marvel. That's not. Thank you for smoking. Marvel Madness the movie is a. It's a flash animation on something awful. That was very funny. No, like the premise of it is ridiculous. It's like, hey, there's this group of friends that loves playing Puyo Pop, but somehow playing Puyo Pop transports you between dimensions, and they warp onto a spaceship that is being piloted by characters that are all named after Tetris pieces. So there's T
in that anime.
I didn't even know they were named. What are the names of the Tetris pieces?
Oh, they're named after the letter that they resemble. So there's like your main character is T, then there's Z, and then there's S, and O is like a little anime creature that goes around making noises.
Shouldn't this all be in Cyrillic?
Nope, it is I don't even want to say that it's like anime or Japanese. Like, it's just incredibly childish. Like, it is okay. it is very kid focused animation, and like I suffered through like the first set of chapters on this just to see what the whole thing was. But like, all this is setting up, like walking you through these mechanics. So you are playing as the captain of the Tetris ship, who is, you know, going up against these Puyo, you know, these Puyo friends, in order to, you know, figure out what's going on. And eventually you team up and you're doing all this, but like, it plays out like battles between people. You know, so like I need to create enough Tetrises to drop enough garbage Puyo blocks on you playing Puyo Pop in order to make you fuck up. So like, two people can be playing two different games and contributing to somebody else's win or lose condition.
I'm very confused.
And there's like a whole bunch of like different, like, just strange, like game variants that I didn't even jump into, like whose names I can't even remember because I you know, admittedly played this for about an hour and a half today, and and a lot of that was just me sitting down playing. Ah, yes, marathon mode in Tetris is really fun, isn't it? Something I've been playing for quite literally most of my life.
It is, but interesting that that hasn't got old. You can always just put a new skin on it and it's still like, it's still a fun game to play.
It's like scratching an itch is really what it is. I can sit down to it and it just feels immediately comfortable. Like it puts me into like a weird little trance.
Yeah, it's weird that you can do that with things that are like very gameplay heavy, but you can't really do that with narrative based things as easily.
But right, yeah, but Tetris doesn't matter what you put around it, like I'll probably go crazy for it. Yeah. But yeah, like this feels like $30 well spent. I've got Tetris on a Nintendo handheld, which is great. I'm interested in trying to get better at Puyo Pop. Playing the Dr. Mario on the 3DS didn't really work for me, but hey, maybe this one will take. Just because I would like to expand my palette a little bit. And that is not just a joke about matching colors.
At the very least, you have the story mode to go through.
Jesus. See, like it's funny because like the challenges they put you through are actually kind of interesting. It's like, hey, clear this number of points while also only clearing like this number of lines. So it really makes you think about the way that you do stuff. Like I don't want to get any single line clear as while I'm playing Tetris because that like that'll tick me down. You know, it'll take down the counter without actually adding to my score in an appreciable way. They do like a mobile game kind of thing too, where they where there's like a base goal and then there's a, you know, 2-star and 3-star.
That would be great if they could like license out Jonathan Blow and get him to make like Tetris Puya puzzles where it's like
yeah, I don't know, it's got like online mode. If I could figure out how online works on the Switch, I would play with people. Yeah, I don't know, but that's the big new thing I've been playing. Do you guys have any questions about Puyo Tetris?
I mean, cool. I have many questions about Puyo Tetris. None that are relevant.
How many layers need to be on top of a Puyo before it gives out and dies?
it can stack up to the entire screen. The only thing that'll crush a Puyo blob or whatever it is a tetromino.
Wait, what's a tetromino? I don't feel like this was explained.
That is the that is the name for the Tetris blocks, the arrangements of four blocks into those possible shapes.
So, can you speculate on the message and symbolism of this game? What was the what were they going for from an artistic sense?
What I think they were going for was, man, these two mechanics don't seem like they would work together, but there might actually be something complementary about them if you run them together. I think the story mode is just such an afterthought, it feels like. The story mode is just a skin that they wrap around, giving you this like sequence of design challenges that are going to escalate in difficulty.
Oh, see, I was thinking more that like the Puyo blocks were the working class that was being, you know, crushed by the weight of the capitalist class it attempts to, you know, build up.
Yeah, by the bourgeoisie. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
If anything, it's like the Puyo friends, they're really like happy go lucky and human and just I don't know, like emotional. Whereas the Tetris friends, they are, you know, like it's a sci-fi kind of thing. Like they're very orderly, like they're the crew on a ship. So it's a little bit like a arts versus sciences kind of thing.
Sure.
But like, I don't know if that's borne out because I will probably never hear another piece of dialogue from this game. Yeah.
So we have now found Cole Stanley Parable.
Well, no, because I actually really love the game itself. It's just this weird thing on top of it that I don't care for. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Played a little bit more Breath of the Wild, but I'm just making gradual progress. I think I'm about up to the point where I might just start following the main story thread and going after some of these bigger dungeons.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just enjoying finding new ingredients and combining them in different ways.
It's a horrible name.
What?
I want to piggyback.
Breath of the Wild.
Oh yeah.
I want to piggyback on top of this. I watched people play Breath of the Wild this week at our work. They had like people bring in Switches after work. It seems really pretty. The stamina thing I was surprised by, like how little it's like Shadow of the Colossus Link, where, and then I saw a lot of people get one shot by like the artifact sort of creatures that have a laser pointing at you.
Oh, those guardians. Yeah, they will wreck your shop.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, that's it's no joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to play it, or were you just kind of in the co-pilot seat?
I only watched.
Ah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Were they far in? Like how many heart containers did our friend Link have?
I think only like three. I think it was like super. I don't think anyone like had seriously played it. And that was part of the reason why I didn't want to jump in is I'd like to play it like from the beginning. So yeah, I didn't want to jump in the middle. But
for as much as the game doesn't tutorialize, like them constraining the area to that tutorial plateau, like when you step out, it feels incredibly large, but it's actually kind of small. Like it is really helpful to like approach it with that limited space.
Okay.
Yeah, is what I would say. I think you made a good decision. Yeah. The other thing I've been playing is Bloodborne. Just because we finished up recording the Bonfireside Chat stuff last week. And I was like, I would really like to play a game that I enjoy out of this series. So I fired up Bloodborne, and that's a really good game. I don't know that I have anything new to add about it that I haven't literally spent hours saying before, but like going back to it, I got to like Vicar Amelia without dying.
That doesn't mean anything to me.
That's like a quarter of the way through the game.
Okay. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, that's surprising.
Yeah. So but yeah, that game is incredibly fun. Just earlier today I played the Hemlock Charnel Lane area. Yeah, love that level. That is like an upper tier in the Souls in the Soulsborne kind of pantheon of
really
of game
areas. It didn't do much for me one way or the other. What's kind of the its thing?
The flow of the level is actually really interesting because you are unlocking a direct route to the boss by kind of making these ever widening loops around it.
I think that I can see that.
Yeah, that is something that has only been done a couple of times, like in Demon Souls, maybe one or two in Dark Souls, and then it was dropped entirely until Bloodborne. So to see that structure come back was really cool. The theming for it really works for me as well. Having these, you know, witches dancing around with their irons under the crematoriums and stuff, and the executioners and the dogs, like it is a really spooky area. I think one of the spookiest areas in a very spooky game. The theming works, and the boss for the area, the witches, the Witch of Hemlock or whatever. I think that is a really fun boss fight because it is unique, because you are trying to find those invisible enemies as they warp around. Like that is cool in a game that is otherwise full of a lot of like kill this large beast fights.
And it does just kind of drop you into it, and like all of a sudden weird shit is happening.
Yep. Yeah. It's good. That was
I
was sad when it was over. So yeah. And that's everything. That is what I've been playing.
Word.
Yeah. Ben, I want to hear what you've been playing.
Bam! I actually got some stuff. I originally thought that I hadn't played a lot this week, but I kind of took stock, and I did okay. one kind of non-video game thing is I played more of Magic the Gathering this weekend. I did a sealed draft with some friends, which is where you have like six packs of cards, you open them up, and you form a deck with whatever cards you get, and then you play one another with those. So it's kind of we have a sealed draft coming up at work that is like sponsored by work. So I wanted to kind of practice doing that. So that was a lot of fun. As just kind of a interesting, like deck building game kind of exercise.
Hmm.
I really like that, 'cause I feel like it basically takes the part that at least for me is the actual fun part of the, of like trading card games, and takes out the fact that like, or I could just look at what like the top ranked player is playing and do that.
Yeah. Catering to the meta.
Yeah. So the advantage of it is everyone's kind of at the same level more or less.
Exactly.
Like granted, some, Exactly. Some people could get some good random draws, but you know, more or less everyone has like the same probability of having a good deck. So that part's nice. It's not like a pay-to-play sort of game or whatever. It's just who can kind of form the best strategy and eke something out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. Kind of getting to know the colors of the different decks better now and kind of like what the styles are. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I have to say about it. I don't know how much people who listen to the show play Magic as well. So I don't know where that's at.
You might be surprised. I think that people will be interested. So when you say breaking out into new colors, I know you've given me this information before, sure. But like, what have you primarily been playing, and like, what is a really interesting kind of deck that you dip your toe into?
Yeah. Okay. So there's like five different colors in Magic, and there's a couple different ways you can play. Sealed is where you open a certain number of packs, and each pack will have all five colors. But you know, the good card will be in a certain color, and like the pretty good cards will be in different colors. So you kind of have to like plan around that. If you do a draft, the way draft works is you open a pack, you take a card, and then you pass the deck to somebody else, and mm-hmm. then somebody else pass one to you. So typically with draft, you're picking specific colors to build a deck out of. And so you need less decks to do a draft versus sealed. So if you play a draft, you're going to have like a very concentrated, like in one or two colors, but you'll have less cards, where if you do sealed, you have a lot more cards, but you might have a weaker deck overall because you only have like twice the amount of cards, but only two fifths of them are what you are going to be making.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
But kind of the rundown is like black is very aggressive and hurtful and killing of other people. White is just a lot of buffing yourself and giving you a lot of life. Blue is a lot of card draw and a lot of spells and countering spells of other people. Green is a lot of like kind of weird things where it's like it's a lot of like energy tokens in the deck that we're playing particularly, which is kind of this like side economy. And then red is kind of like black, where it's a more aggressive, like quick sort of deck where you'll have a creature very early on and they'll do a lot of damage early, but then might not be able to last long.
Zerg, Lightning Rush.
Yeah, kind of like that. And so usually when you make a deck, you'll have it be like multiple colors. So it'll usually be two or three colors, depending upon how the deck size. In sealed, you typically do a 40 card deck. So it's usually probably going to be a two color sort of thing. So you kind of usually what you do is you look at like maybe your best like two or three colors that you have out of all your packs, and then kind of try and make a deck out of that and see if there's any like synergies between colors. So like if you like have one color that gives you like a lot of like counters on your cards, and then you have another one that like punishes people for not having counters or something, then you can get like a synergy out of that. So
yeah,
I don't know. It's fun. It's definitely a nerdy sort of game, but it's really enjoyable. It's there's like so many permutations of what you can do. Like that's kind of like I guess like kind of how card games go. You know, like since you have so many choices of what you can include and what you don't need to include. So
yeah. But like, like, what have you primarily leaned on before, and then like, what have you tried new this time?
Yeah, so I think definitely my favorite is card draw, because
I mean deck color wise. I mean,
yeah. So by card draw, I mean blue. So blue is usually heavily invested in card draw, because like a lot of the times, what you'll do is when you pick a given color, they'll call them like bomb cards, like cards that are like game winning cards or whatever.
Okay.
And you might have a couple of those in your deck, but the problem is if they're at the bottom of your deck, you're never going to get to them, and so you won't be able to use them. Card draw kind of evens out your deck, because if you have like maybe like 10 different card draw cards in your deck, it basically speeds up you going through your deck. And so if you do have a bomb somewhere in your deck, you're more likely to actually get to it.
Hmm.
So usually, like, card draw, I haven't seen a lot of downside to it so far. So a lot of times I've been doing, like, blue and one other color. So the week that we did this week, I did blue and white, just because white was my strongest color that I had drafted so far in my sealed packs. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting. And then we played one round of multiplayer, which is kind of even more interesting, because usually you just play heads up against one other person. It's similar to Hearthstone from what I've heard of it. But with multiplayer, you know, like you have each person like will have creatures, and you can choose like who you're attacking. But attacking someone kind of leaves yourself vulnerable to being attacked by other people. So there's kind of more like politics that go into it. And it's like it's a little bit of a different dynamic. It's more of like a fun experience, not necessarily like a serious like game strategy experience.
Right.
Back to the game theory.
Yeah. It's a different type of game being played, I guess. But
yeah,
so that's fun. Do you guys have any other questions about that or
no?
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, I think I'll probably keep playing that with some of my coworkers. I've started to invest in, like, I have sleeves and everything to put cards in that are the good cards. So I don't know. I don't know how deep I'll go into it or not, but it's been fun so far. So
yeah.
All right. Other thing I got, I'll get out of the way. I played Rocket League. Rocket League's great, whatever. Other thing I'll talk about is, I mentioned this before, we had an event at work after work where some people brought in their Nintendo Switches and people were just hanging out and playing them for fun. But I got to play some 1-2 Switch with some other people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. It's just like a lot of mini games. It's definitely like a party game sort of thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of it kind of leans on like the ridiculousness of the games and how kind of either wacky or how like fun or creative it is to play. Yeah. And they're very bite-sized games, so it's kind of similar to like WarioWare or Mario Party type experience.
Yeah, people fixate on like milking a cow.
We did not play the cow milking game, but we saw that as an option.
That's one that PETA flipped out about.
Really?
Oh, fun.
But, I mean, I'm not surprised by that, but do you know what the mechanics of milking the cow are and why somebody would be upset by it? Or
just the fact that it is the oppressing cows.
Right, okay. Right, yeah.
All right.
Enslaving them for their glands.
Some less controversial games. They had one that was really fun where it was guess the number of like marbles in a box. And so the way it works, each person has a Switch controller, and what happens is they basically simulate the Switch controller being like a closed box with a certain number of marbles inside.
Okay.
And so as you move the controller, it'll give haptic feedback of things rolling around in it, and it'll give noises of things like hitting up against the sides. And so you have to like slowly tilt it and slowly move it, and you can like, it feels as if marbles are rolling down the controller, you know, by the vibrations.
Oh, that sounds so creepy.
Yeah, and it'll you know, like, it'll like hit the side and stuff, and so you have to try and count like the number of marbles that are hitting against it. And so it's kind of heads up against another person, and so you have a minute to try and figure out what it is. You make a guess and you set your controller down, and then once both people have it, if one person's right and the other person's wrong, they win. If both people are right, it goes to the next one and it's harder, and harder typically means more marbles. So like it'll be like 9 or something like that. It's really hard to count that many marbles like just by moving it around in a box.
It starts feeling like noise.
And even if you like move them very slowly so that one at a time they're like hitting the wall or whatever, it's still like really hard to keep count of all that, and it's like really easy to make a mistake. But that was like a really creative game. One of the more wacky ones, they had like a gorilla dance type game where what you do is you act
dance
like
in secret.
Not in secret, but to the beat of the music, and but all the dancing entails is acting like you're pounding your chest back and forth between your two arms. So you have one arm always outstretched and the other one that's like up against your, you know, your pecs or whatever, and you just alternate that back and forth. But the
best
thing is
rhythm game ever.
Yeah. So they'll like play music, they'll play a sample of music, and then you have to like hit your chest to the beat of that music sample after they've played it once.
Okay.
And so whoever is like most aligned with it gets a better score and they win. And the game only takes like 30 seconds or a minute to play, so it's like pretty quick. Another one they had is a boxing game where each person holds a controller and they'll call out three different attacks. Like you can either do a straight punch, a haymaker, a hook, or an uppercut.
Okay.
And so it'll just be like uppercut and you have to mimic doing an uppercut, or it'll do straight and you have to like mimic punching straight or whatever. And so the cool part about this is after you both do these, like usually there's a lot of messing up or whatever, it'll replay the fight that happened based on your actions. So you know, like if the other person gestured better than you, then they'll get that punch. And then if you gestured better than them, then you get a punch. And so it plays out the fight between the two and then scores and then somebody wins.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So basically just a lot of charming, like bite-sized games like that. So definitely good for party game situation. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of people have been kind of really down on 1-2 Switch. And I think that what it boils down to is the fact that it's a $50 game.
Ooh.
Yeah, like probably so like as something that is like a faux, like what if Sports Friends was all JS Joust kind of thing. Like it is a good, you know, it seems like a fine demonstration of the Switch, but like, man, I would be all over this, like, to take into work and stuff, if it was not $50. And because it's a Nintendo game, I have no confidence that it will drop down to like the $15 that I think it would actually be worth to me.
Yeah. I would say it's definitely worth like 20 to 30, maybe in that range.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing that's kind of cool is they do something similar to Smash Brothers, where like at the beginning you have like maybe 6 or 8 like different games you play. And then after you go through all of them, it says, all right, now you know how to play. And it just like opens up. And then there's like 20 different games that you can play. So that part was kind of neat. But yeah. I don't know.
Huh. Yeah, no, it's cool. It's cool that you had a good time with it. Like that was something that I was really kind of jazzed about when they announced the Switch. Then I saw the price tag. But like it sounds like you also played it like in a really favorable scenario with a bunch of people.
Yeah. It was definitely a good environment to be introduced to too. So
yeah.
All right. So I got one last game. The last game that I have is actually a recent game. So this is exciting.
Oh, wow.
So I've been playing PlayerUnknown's Battleground. Have you guys heard of
this? Yeah,
what
the hell is that? I see that on Steam every time I log on.
Okay, yeah. I'm gonna need some help here.
Okay, so this is a new PC game. The only reason I heard about it is a lot of people are basically jumping ship from Rocket League to start playing this. And so there's like a lot of buzz around it. But this is basically a battle royale simulator where there's an island. 100 people will drop down on this island. There are weapons and like gear scattered about the island. And then like every 5 minutes or so, there's a circle and it says you need to be in the circle by the end of 5 minutes.
Okay.
And so this like electric field will slowly converge down to the circle that they put on the map.
Oh, so it's not just like a King of the Hill. It's like the battlefield getting smaller.
Smaller and smaller. Yeah. And so if you're in this electric field that closes or whatever, your health just slowly drains until you die. And then after another 5 minutes, it'll do a random, like, smaller circle within that circle. I was like, now you got to go here in the next 5 minutes. And so it slowly gets smaller and smaller until there's one person left. It's a really interesting game. The first interesting game design decision that they have is at the start of the game, the way it works is you are in a plane that's flying over the island. You get to choose when to jump out of the plane, and you basically skydive down to the island. So you can choose what direction you want to head to on the island and like what sort of building you might want to head to. So a lot of people head towards big buildings because there's a lot of weapons there. And so they can probably grab something. But then the other thing you need to be worried about is like if you start on like the end of an island and the circle happens to be at the other end, then you're screwed. So a lot of people might want to start towards like the middle, or there's also vehicles scattered about on this island. So you might want to go to a more populated area because you might be able to get a vehicle, and that way you can just drive to wherever the circle is and have a better chance of like getting there. Yeah. I misunderstood it because I had only seen one video about this before I played it. And so I thought I knew where it converged to every time. Uh-huh. And so I just happened to head that direction, which was like kind of like a smaller, more remote area. So I figured, okay, I'll get the drop on people. I'll go here first and just find a hiding spot and just chill. I don't care if other people like are stocking up a bunch of stuff. I'll just try and use the element of surprise in my favor. I think it just so happened that the subcircle was in the region that I went to, but I think I got lucky with that aspect. I think normally it's just random or whatever. So I went to a more smaller, desolate region. There weren't a lot of people there. I didn't see anyone there, actually. So I scavenged a couple of houses. I got a little bit of gear, some light gear, and I think I got a shotgun. And then what I did is I went out. There's like this kind of boneyard airfield or whatever, and I hid in a shadow of an airplane. It was kind of dark, and I just laid prone there with a shotgun.
Okay.
And I waited for 5 minutes till the field closed, didn't see anybody around at all. Then I waited another 5 minutes for it to close to a smaller portion. And I think about a minute before it started closing, I hear somebody running by. And so I got up, followed them, and I was able to take them out with the shotgun. and all this time there's a live feed. So you start off with 100 people, and it'll slowly say like
100 people?
Starts with 100 people, yeah.
Oh my God.
So, yeah. And so it'll slowly say, like, this person was killed by this person with this weapon or by a car or with this or whatever. And it'll give you kind of a live feed of that. And so it'll show you, like, how many people are left, like a live update of that. And so as it gets smaller and smaller, you see the numbers start to drop. And so I ended up being pretty sneaky. I actually ended up making it. I've only played one game of this so far, but I ended up making it to third position. And I only had 2 kills. but I was able to just be like sneaky enough. And then you, when you kill somebody, you can scavenge from them and like take all their gear. They have like painkillers as something that you can like revitalize your health with. And then you can kind of, if they have better gear, you can equip that and kind of farm off of somebody else. Mm-hmm. So it's a really interesting game. I think I'll keep playing it. You can play as teams as well, which is something that I want to start trying to do.
Is that something where it's like a Fragile Alliance kind of thing, or is it
like a Firm Alliance?
It's like a team-based thing, like enforced by the game system.
Yeah, so it's like you can enter with like a party of like 2 or 4, and then so it'll be like 50 teams of 2 or 25 teams of 4 or something like that. And so then you're working together with the other people like, okay, let's like hold down this building, and then like you look out these windows, I'll look at these windows, and then we'll just try and hold this. But if we need to move, we can move. And there's things like the vehicles. You can have like 4 people in the vehicles at a time. So you can have one person driving, you can have the other 3 people with guns out. So that if you drive by someone, they can actually like shoot at them and something. You're not like exposed.
Halo has taught me that never actually works.
Yeah, you never want to be in the passenger seat. That's usually bad. But they haven't made lock-on rockets yet, so I think you're safe for now.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. Once that patch comes in, then the game's still in I think open beta, or I think it's still like not officially released yet.
It's like a early release on Steam is what the page I'm looking at says.
Just
based on your description, I knew this was going to be an ARMA mod.
Okay.
that's what it started as. I was like, this sounds like an ARMA mod, and I watch a video and it's like, yeah, that totally looks like an ARMA mod, or like it might have began as one, like what is it, that zombie one, I forget the name of it even.
H1N1?
No, H1Z1.
Z something?
Yeah, I'm just drawing a blank. Yeah, Daisy, there we go. But then I looked on Wikipedia and confirmed that yes, this began as an ARMA mod. So, yeah, cool. But it's like a third person shooter kind of thing.
Yeah, and you can change the viewpoint, so you can shoot down the barrel like if you need to zoom in on somebody. I don't know. It's interesting so far. I mean, I'll probably keep playing it. Right now, I don't know if it's a Rocket League usurper or not, but I mean, the one experience I had with it was pretty fun. So
yeah. Well, sounds awesome. I had no idea this game existed.
Yeah.
Cool. Very cool. Is that all?
Yep.
Great. David, how about you?
Sure. I've been boring. I haven't played much of anything really. Just been a little bit more grinding on Warframe. Unlocked a new katana.
Okay.
That's
is that just a stat upgrade on your katana, or is like a new move set?
Actually, both. So the katana is actually the movesets are one of the rarer items in the game, and they tend to be very creative. So like one of the movesets is based on have you seen any of the Zatoichi movies?
No.
Classic like samurai movies where basically he's a blind samurai but uses a reverse grip, so like holds it like a like psycho
blade
style
blade
with
first.
A knife. Yeah.
Oh, I thought I was joking. Huh.
No, like yeah, blade down, like
just bops people
but,
with
but,
the
but he holds it by the blade.
No, doesn't hold it by the blade.
All right. Oh, okay. Yeah.
holds it by the handle but with like the other way of how you normally hold it.
The right. Blade's facing him?
Like underhanded.
Yeah, underhanded. Okay. And so like yeah, and so it's all like quick slash and draw, your draw and slash type stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of creative stuff with that, but it's considered one of the two main end game melee weapons.
Okay.
And then which now means I'm to the point in the game where now I can grind into, like, actually upgrading it to make it, you know, competent in end game. So, yeah. Warframe is for grinding. but, yeah, I don't know. Other than that, it's just been kind of fun. I don't know if I said I unlocked a character that can go, like, Red Dead Redemption style, or Red Dead,
where you can point, yeah, like the bullets where you hit.
Yeah, yeah, can basically enter like a toggle mode where you can basically highlight and mark enemies, and then you do like the Naruto style, like ninja disappear and like stab them in the back one after another, and
yeah, yeah,
stuff like that. So yeah, just fun stuff. It's basically just running around being kind of overpowered and doing stupid things.
I can see that.
So other than that, I did try a little bit of Orcs Must Die Unchained, which is, I guess, the free-to-play sequel to Orcs Must Die 2. So it's basically, it's a tower defense game with sort of like... what was the dungeon? Well, basically, it's a tower defense game, but where you're also actually playing a hero, going around and fighting alongside the towers. So a little bit like a combination of tower defense and MOBA.
Okay.
And has a really like it's very much a kind of parody of fantasy game type tone. So I don't know, you argue about whether mana potions should be considered performance enhancing substances.
Okay.
just weird stuff like that.
Yeah.
So far it seems like a pretty solid game overall. One thing that does seem kind of interesting is the towers are basically like traps, so think like spike traps or like poison dart shooters, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But they seem to actually be like physics enabled. So, for example, if you like one of the traps is the kind of, you know, hammer that swings down from the ceiling and hits people. Mm-hmm. But if the ceiling's too high or your enemy is just abnormally short, like a kobold, it'll just straight up miss them.
So it's modeled like that.
Yeah, yeah, stuff like that. And I think you can also do and then get points for if, like, maybe you'll have a spike trap that will, like, shoot up and, like, throw the dude and into another trap, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's necessarily one that's, like, it's not like doing, say, like, skill shots in a bullet storm type game or something, but still is kind of a neat feature.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I haven't gotten into it so far, but, yeah, it seems kind of cool, and like I said, it's free to play.
I know this is really shallow. I wish that these games, because they've been around for a while, like Orcs Must Die is like an indie PC thing, people play it.
Mm-hmm.
I've always just kind of bounced off of even, like, looking at or buying it because the aesthetic, like the look of it is just kind of Warcraft generic a little bit. Yeah, like that. That aesthetic just doesn't work for me at all in a way that, like, it kind of, you know, at this point doesn't matter what the game is because it doesn't draw my attention the way it probably ought to.
No, I can definitely see that. I do think at least this one, I think, is it, at least some of it is semi-intentional.
Okay.
Because, like, I would say... I'm trying to think, like, most of the heroes you could probably trace back to being, like, direct callbacks to various, like, popular fantasy, you know, characters and stuff.
Okay.
But I still think, that's a good point. And, yeah.
I don't mean to take shit on it if people enjoy it. It's just like that, is something that bugs me.
No, I totally get what you're saying. I mean, yeah, that's... That is definitely a thing, and I know, I wonder how much that is just because I feel like a lot of this stuff comes from, like, the MOBAs, you know, Defense of the Ancient type stuff.
It's also an aesthetic that a lot of people really like, You know, like it's,
I suppose that's
it's a popular look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Hmm. Yeah. Cool. Well, is that everything, David?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Cool. Well, we kept our promise. It is a little bit of a shorter episode. Not like an order of magnitude, but, you know, it's up 2 hours. Yeah, so I think that's everything. Do you want to button it up?
Buttons. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
That's Jala.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Level, level number 194. Again, getting up there, approaching that 200. We're so grateful that you've taken the time to listen. If you want to help us out, consider going over to the Patreon page, patreon.com/duckfeedtv to support the entire network of shows. This week isn't the week, but we're getting up to it. Take a look. If you do not listen to Watch Out for Fireballs, maybe check that out, because this coming week there's going to be something happening on that channel that you may want to see and find out about.
Do we have a countdown clock yet?
No.
We need a countdown clock.
I also don't know when, like, exactly what time of day that's going to be coming out.
That's why you need a countdown clock.
To force it, or to like have it sit at zero for a couple of hours until my lunch break, when I can sit down and actually like push it out.
You know.
We should just have a doomsday clock like in The Watchmen.
Oh yeah, just like have it cut in every 15 seconds and give an update.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool. And also, share this show, The Level, with your friends. If they like video games or podcasts, we would love to have them. And, as always, stick around for, the upcoming episodes. They will be fun. Yeah. So I think that's everything. I know I've said that a bunch tonight, but I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dave Mysmith 777 on Twitter.
I've been Merkelizer on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's your name?
Ben.
Okay. All right.
It's been Ben everywhere else.
And stick around for some titles. Eat the leg. Okay, so who has titles? Who has stuff?
Got a few.
Okay.
I have It's Depressiant.
I just have just the word Depressiant.
I have, okay. Depressiant as well.
Okay.
I have My Mind Works Like a Tetris. Marble Madness. Firm Alliance. And Buttons.
Okay. Ben?
I had Depression, and I had Swooped.
I also had Swooped. I feel good just going by the votes on this one. Let's do Depression.
All right.
Cool.
Sad but true.
All right. Awesome.
I feel like though I need like was it Young Frankenstein? You know, every time he says what's that
Frankenstein?
The lady's name? Oh, Frau Blucher.
Yes. I need, like, with the lightning crash, I need every time someone says depressant, we just need wah, 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 wah.
I did a search. Depressant isn't an actual word, although I think maybe because I have it capitalized, that is why spell check is not throwing an exception for me. Let me see here. I'll just write one word that I know is not.
Oh. Although apparently in French it is.
Oh, okay. Huh.
What is it French for?
I think this is French. It's French. One sec, I'm going to Google Translate. It means deprecating.
Huh. Well, that's fine too. If we pop up on French Google, that's okay.
And they'll know that we're humble types of dudes.
Yeah. But yes, that must be the case. It must be seeing the French version, because I just wrote fuck buttons with a capital F, and that has the red squiggle. So
are we recording right now, by the way?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you want me to stop recording?
I will say something after we're done recording.
All right. Well, we can be done.
All right. Cool.